Hi, I'm Derek Jensen. This is Resistance Radio on the Progressive Radio Network. My guest today is Noah Greenwald, Endangered Species Director for the Center for Biological Diversity. He directs the center's efforts to protect new species under the Endangered Species Act to ensure that imperiled species receive effective protections that we have and that we have the strongest Endangered Species Act possible. He also works to educate the public about the importance of protecting biodiversity, about the multitude of threats to the survival of North American wildlife. He holds a Bachelor of Science in Ecology from the Evergreen State College and a Master's in Forest Ecology and Conservation from the University of Washington. Before he joined the center in 1997, he worked as a field biologist surveying northern spotted owls and marbled murrelets and banding Hawaiian songbirds. Today, we talk about grizzly bears. So first off, thank you for your work, and second, thank you for being on the program.
Oh, thanks to you, Derek, for having me.
Recently, the center has been promoting the idea of reintroducing grizzly bears to California, and you know, I don't know why that's really necessary, because we have a couple in zoos and we have one on our flag, and isn't that enough?
Yeah, well, that's exactly the point. You know, actually, the grizzly bear is the state animal in California. And, you know, it's on the flag. It's just incredibly iconic. And, you know, I think, you know, there's a fair amount of awareness of that, but I think a lot of people don't even realize that the bear that's on their flag is, in fact, a grizzly bear, and that grizzly bears haven't been in the state since 1924.
Let's talk for a moment. Before we talk about the present, I'll tell you two things I know about the past, and then you can tell me more about the past. I know that I read that prior to conquest in Northern California, if you were near a river, the chances were pretty good you'd see a grizzly bear about every 15 minutes. And I also know that in San Francisco, I did a talk down in San Francisco last year, and I looked up what San Francisco was like prior to conquest. And one of the things I remember reading about was, quote, troops, end quote, of grizzly bears who would come down to feed on whale carcasses. So that suggests to me that there were a lot of grizzly bears in California. Can you talk about their historic range and population, if you know it?
Yeah, I mean, there's actually a great book called California Grizzly that details, you know, all the historic accounts of grizzly bears that people saw and found. And yeah, there's phrases in there like herds of grizzly bears and stuff, you know, which is not usually how you think of them. And so I think that they were quite abundant, which, you know, makes sense because California is a really rich state and was an incredibly rich state. I mean, the Bay Delta prior to colonization must have been just amazing with, you know, grizzly bears, wolves, orcas, you know, just the whole thing, just tons of salmon. And so, you know, there's accounts of grizzly bears from the crest of the Sierra all the way down to the coast. In terms of, you know, where there's habitat left, it really is the Sierra Nevada. That's, you know, that's the area that has the big open spaces that could, again, have grizzly bears. Maybe the North Coast, there's some areas in there that probably could, again, and have great food sources for them. But they were really an abundant animal and, you know, really all in a lot of different habitats in California historically. And, you know, something I didn't know before, you know, starting to look into this and reading that book was that Grizzly Adams, which, you know, I used to watch that show when I was a kid, was actually a real person. There was a person named Grizzly Adams that would walk around in San Francisco with a grizzly bear, apparently. And so that was a real thing. And there was the grizzly bear named Monarch, which, of course, is very famous. That was the last one, and it was in captivity and ended up dying. And, you know, so it's a big part of the state's history. And, you know, we think those animals could be there again and that there's certainly space for them.
Let's talk a little bit more about history. Did they, you said from the crest of the Sierra Nevadas down to the coast, and they went from the north, did they go all the way to the Mexican border too? Did they go all the way to the south of drier areas?
That I'm not sure how far south they went, and I'm trying to remember from that book. I don't think that there's a lot of historical accounts. I would guess, you know, certainly that they would have been I would think they would have, in LA County and those areas, the mountains in the Southern California ranges. I would think that would be pretty good habitat for them. I would imagine that they, I don't think that they're a desert species, so I doubt that they went much into the desert areas. But I don't even know if that's really well documented. That's a current area of controversy for wolves. Fish and Wildlife Service says that wolves were everywhere except for the dry deserts, but there was pretty good deer populations in the Mojave, and one of the last wolves that was taken and is in a collection was from the Mojave. So there's some question about that, and I would imagine you'd have to dig in more for bears as well to try and figure that out. Bears did go down into Mexico in North America, into the Sierra Madre, more in the southwest. There was definitely grizzly bears down in the Sierra Madre. That was one of the places they were wiped out from.
So you've mentioned the word habitat a couple times. What are their requirements? What are they like? And do they, I mean, what do they? I live with black bears here. I know them a lot, and I mean, I see black bears every single day. And it's if I didn't, my idea of bears before was like them chasing after, some big animal and killing it. But the truth is that they eat a lot of grass, eat a lot of moths, eat a lot of little things. They're omnivorous. And what about grizzly bears? What do they eat and what do they like for habitat?
Yeah, grizzly bears are really, and yeah, bears in general, but I think particularly grizzly bears are one of the more omnivorous carnivores, and they really eat a lot of plant matter. And actually, that's one of the things that they found about grizzly bears. One of the things that provides support for reintroducing them to places is that they've been found to increase plant biodiversity through their digging and through pooping out seeds. So they've been shown to increase plant biodiversity, and grizzly bears, it's the same species as the European brown bear, and so they have an incredibly wide range. They occur all over Siberia, and into Europe, and then all the way across North America. So brown bears have a really big range, and within that range, they specialize on different foods. One thing for California specific, there's a scientist named Dave Matson. Maybe you've heard of him. He used to work for the USGS, and specialized in grizzly food sources in the Northern Rockies. And he really, when I talked to him about the Sierra Nevada and whether California is a good place for bears still, he really keyed in on acorns as a really important food source for them, and the fact that California is so oak dominated, that would be a great rich food source for them there. And I think that's right. And so they have really varied diets, as you mentioned, from insects. So like in Yellowstone, army cutworm moths are a really important food source, to fish. Obviously salmon in a lot of places are a big food source, to big game, elk, and particularly in the spring when there's fawns and elk calves, they feed on elk, and they get meat when they can, I think is how they are. They're different than wolves in that sense, where wolves, really focus on taking down prey and have a very meat-driven diet. They are more opportunistic, and they'll get meat when they can. I mean, in particular, wolves and grizzly bears have a big relationship in that sense of that. Grizzly bears get food from wolf kills often, in Yellowstone, and so there's a real relationship there.
Do they, how did they get driven from how and why did they get driven from California?
They, basically got shot, and they were hunted in the same sort of coordinated campaigns that removed wolves. Poisons, hunting, trapping, the whole thing. They were systematically eradicated from California and much of their west and much of the rest of the west. Currently, the recovery areas that they're in, so they're they're doing pretty well in Yellowstone National Park. They're doing pretty well in what they call the North Continental Divide ecosystem, which is the area surrounding Glacier National Park. But that's about it. There's two other population, existing population, well, three other existing populations if you count the North Cascades, but there's only been scattered bears there. And then there's population in Cabinet Yak and in the Selkirks. And both those populations are really struggling. They have, not that many bears, fewer than 50 bears in each case. And so they're in roughly 4% of their historic range in North America, and still struggling in that small area. So they've really been beaten back, and due to our intolerance and, largely due to conflicts with livestock.
Historically, weren't bears also, I read somewhere that grizzly bears were routinely on the Great Plains too.
Yeah, that's right. They were really a plains animal. They weren't, I mean, they were always up in the mountains too, but they were, I think accounts by Lewis and Clark and others were that they were pretty abundant on the plains.
And then if we go all the way back, do they go all the way across the country to the East Coast?
They didn't actually. It's not clear where the line was, but it was somewhere in the Great Plains,
Huh.
somewhere they were just on the western half of North America.
Okay, so you mentioned earlier that the Sierra Nevadas had good habitat for them. What does that, you mentioned what they eat, but what does that mean, good habitat? Why would, to take a really obvious case, why would downtown LA not be good habitat? Why would the Sierras be good habitat? And I would also add the Siskiyous. I believe the Siskiyous would be good too.
Yeah, so there's a scientist, Carlos Carroll, who does a lot of modeling and mapping of habitat for various carnivores, including grizzly bears, wolves, fisher, a bunch of other ones. So he's developed these models to sort of identify potential areas. And one of the key things in that model, in the models for both grizzly and wolves, is lack of roads and lack of human presence. Both grizzly bears and wolves really need that. They need big areas without a lot of people, and so the Sierra Nevada pops out for that reason of that it's a big area with few roads. Especially that southern half, with the John Muir Wilderness and the Golden Trout Wilderness and that whole big complex of wilderness down there really pops out for not having very many people. What's interesting is that grizzly bears are actually making a really big, well, brown bears, I should say, are making a really big comeback in Europe. They've been doing a lot better. Like they're in Italy and France and Spain and Switzerland. There was recently, oh, that was a wolf, actually. There was recently a wolf in Holland. So they've really been making a big comeback there. And actually, in some of the areas that they're coming back, there's, definitely human settlement. So, what's interesting about that is that, you're sort of defining habitat based on human tolerance, which I'm slightly uncomfortable with. They could probably survive in more places if we didn't kill them, and we, managed ourselves better so that we avoided conflicts with them. But given the current sort of our current cultural practices, it really comes down to places where there's not very many people and not very many roads.
And they,
And I, you know,
go ahead.
Northern California, actually, when you look at the maps for Northern California and the Siskiyou, it does have spots. It's just that they're individual, sort of divided up spots because there's roads and settlements that sort of come between them. I think it probably could work, though.
Well, the
And the
honest.
nice thing about up there is you get the coastal habitats as well, which is, it'd be great to see bears in a coastal habitat in the lower 48. I mean, how cool would that be? So that area is exciting in my mind because of that.
Well, and honestly, the reason that I'm pushing for that is because I live in Crescent City, California, and so it's purely selfish that I want grizzlies here.
Yeah.
So we should take any suggestions I make about Northern California with a grain of salt. So I have read that the calorie requirement for I read something really cool about grizzly bears last year that that their caloric requirement is so high that they actually destroy their kidneys through like eating too many calories a day and having insulin shock. And then their kidneys, which no, yeah, their kidneys, which don't regenerate in humans, their kidneys regenerate when they hibernate.
Wow, I never heard that before. That's interesting.
Yeah, I'm just throwing out that factoid, and then that sort of leads to a question about you've talked about a lack of humans. That's really important, but let's talk more. I mean, you talk about acorns too, but they require a tremendous amount of food. So, what sort of food sources would they have if they're down here on the coast? He says, lobbying for the coast again. They've got salmon, but what sort of food sources would they have in the Sierra Nevadas that could support a bear who's eating? I'm making up the number, but it's like 50,000 calories a day or something. You know, who could support that? What would they get for food up there? Presuming they're not getting shot by ranchers or anything.
Yeah, and to be honest on that question, I think that's one of the things that really needs to be looked at. You know, I think what we would push for reintroduction is there needs to be some sort of detailed study that looks at this, you know, that looks at that, what are the foods and how many bears could the area support and where would these bears come from? Those are the three questions that really need closer look. What we've done is we filed a petition with Fish and Wildlife Service. We asked them for a new recovery plan for grizzly bears, and we highlighted areas that we think could be considered for recovery, and the Sierra Nevada is one of those among others. And so, in terms of before we actually got to reintroduction, there would need to be a detailed study on that. But you know, just throwing stuff out there, the acorns, when I talked to Dave Mattson, that's what he really keyed in on. I know bear grass is a food that they like, one of the roots that they dig up. I know that there are decent deer populations in the Sierra Nevada, although I think both deer and elk are a bit down from historic in the Sierra Nevada. I've heard rumblings about that. So, you know, that's another potential food source. I would imagine trout in various lakes and streams would be a food source. You know, but again, all that stuff needs to be looked at more closely. And that's ultimately what we're asking for in seeking reintroduction, is that this exploration of additional areas. This, by the way, is something Fish and Wildlife Service actually said that they need to do themselves in a 2011 5-year review of grizzly bears. They admitted that their 1993 recovery plan was out of date and that they needed to consider additional areas for recovery. Because right now their recovery efforts really just focused on the Northern Rockies, and that's it.
You said three areas, I believe. What are the other areas besides Sierra Nevadas? Are they in other states?
Yeah, there's other good habitat in other states like the Southern Rockies and Colorado and Utah. A really big area actually is the Mogollon, in Arizona, New Mexico, Mogollon Plateau and Gila kind of combined, actually even up into the Grand Canyon a bit. So like Grand Canyon, Mogollon Plateau, Gila, there's a huge amount of habitat there. I think the, you know, unfortunately the politics in Arizona and New Mexico are a lot tougher than they are in California. California is a relatively wildlife friendly state, hence just banned bobcat trapping, for example. And you know, so I think politically, California, if there was any area where you could convince people that grizzly bears should be reintroduced, it seems like California has in some ways the most promise.
Well, you mentioned politics. So tell me about the politics of this. What are some of the impediments that you're facing in all three of those relocation areas, and then specifically California? What are some of the arguments against, and what are some of the opponents to this?
Well, I think, you know, I mean, I think the fact that, you know, they're a dangerous animal. You know, they're unlike a black bear, which will typically run away or run up a tree or something like that. If a grizzly bear feels threatened, its instinct is to charge. They're a charging predator, so they occasionally maul people, and you know, the risk of that is just infinitesimal. You know, it's just driving your car to the store is considerably more dangerous than traveling in grizzly country. But nonetheless, they do occasionally attack people. And if grizzly bears were brought back to the Sierra Nevada, you know, someone in the backcountry, there, you know, you couldn't say that someone wouldn't get attacked, because someone might get attacked by a grizzly bear.
I know that there are there's one person killed by a black bear every 2 years in North America. So that's how infrequent that is. Do you know the numbers on grizzly bears? I know that it is, like you said, less dangerous than driving a car, but do you happen to know the numbers?
Yeah, it's really, let me dig those up, because I published an op-ed in the LA Times, and actually the Yellowstone National Park has some numbers on this, because, you know, Yellowstone National Park gets over 3 million visitors a year, and they occasionally, you know, your chances of getting attacked by a grizzly bear in Yellowstone are just really small, smaller than a lot of things. I mean, you have a decent chance of getting struck by lightning. It's similar to that in terms of odds, but let me look that up really quick, because they had some stats about that.
Yeah, I mean, this is far afield from our current topic, but while you're looking that up, it's always struck me how much more scared we are of, like, getting bit by a shark when, you know, there are, you know, your odds of getting cancer from chemicals is infinitely higher. Or getting
just
in a car wreck.
Drowning, you know. I mean,
yeah, true.
Yeah. Yeah, it's true. It's true. It's you know, our fears are very irrational. And you know, I think perhaps though something Oh yeah. So, according to the park, and when you go into Yellowstone, your chances of getting injured by a bear are 1 in 3 million. So it's, you know, something on that order. Obviously, if you go in the backcountry, where the grizzly bears are, you know, your odds are going to increase a little bit, but it's still going to be a very low likelihood. I mean, both Denali and Yellowstone and Glacier, all three of those parks get a lot of backcountry travel. And, you know, there is a grizzly bear mauling in either Glacier or Yellowstone every year or two. But again, compared to the numbers of people who go there, it's just very low odds.
Well,
so that is one of the obstacles
uh-huh.
to it. And then the other one, of course, is livestock. You know, the fact that the livestock industry, you know, they will sustain losses to grizzly bears, and, you know, they've historically and presently are a very powerful special interest in state politics. And so that's a formidable opponent to grizzly bear reintroduction, unfortunately.
I know that for wolf reintroduction or wolf presence, I've done some interviews about this where the livestock owners in, for example, Washington State, Montana, actually get paid more than market value when a wolf kills a sheep or cow. And are there similar projects, programs for grizzly bears where their argument ends up being not even financial?
Yeah, there's compensation programs for grizzly bears as well in Montana and Idaho.
So in a financial sense, that's a complete non-issue, right?
It's true. It's true. I mean, they have their arguments. I don't agree with them, but they argue that, you know, with wolves, that they argue, one, that they don't get market value and that they can't find most of the ones that get killed. So they try and argue that they're losing more than what they get compensated for, and that also that the wolves are scaring their cows, which makes them skinnier.
And
part of their argument, actually.
And recognize that those cows are on public lands, too.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, recognize that the model of ranching that we put forward in the Western U.S. is one where the cows are turned loose on public lands and encouraged to forage widely and individually in order to maximize how much forage they get. So instead of doing what, you know, an elk does, which is to bunch up in order to reduce chances of loss and be able to keep an eye out and act like a natural ungulate, they're sort of encouraged to do the opposite, which is to separate out, and which makes them more vulnerable. So, I mean, the whole practice of ranching is done in a way that puts cows at risk from predators and a host of other things as well. So, you know, that's part of the work that's being done, and there is a lot of work being done on that front to try and get practices changed to reduce risk, sending range riders out and stuff like that. So, and that stuff actually does work.
So one argument against it is that they're big, strong animals who could kill you. And another argument against it is they're big, strong animals who could kill cows. What other arguments are made against reintroduction?
Those are the primary ones. The other one I've been hearing since we've been floating this idea, and I just think is wrong, is that, and you've heard this about wolves too, that the grizzly bear that it was in California, the California grizzly, was a subspecies. So you'd be introducing the wrong grizzly bear. And that's just wrong. But I have heard that argument, including from a spokesperson from Department of Fish and Wildlife. And, you know, that's based on Merriam, you know, from Merriam's elk, was one of the early mammalogy taxonomists. And he was a renowned splitter, and so he tried to divide grizzly bears up into something like 90 subspecies, and there's only two of those that are currently recognized. So it's not, you know, it's probably not right. I mean, the bears, I wouldn't be surprised if the bears in California had some differences, but they probably weren't the subspecies, and you know, the bears in North America would be so closely related, as that's just not right. You could reintroduce them, and they wouldn't act in any kind of functionally different way. But a similar thing is said about wolves too, that they're, you know, the same thing, where they originally thought, you know, around the turn of the 9th century, that there was a Rocky Mountain gray wolf, and you know, that's not well accepted at this point with modern genetic techniques. But people still say, you know, the Canadian wolves, you know, these Canadian wolves are bloodthirsty and they're the wrong species. They're an invasive species. That's what some people say.
So if we take their argument at face value, and let's pretend for a moment that it's actually true, what they're suggesting is that the grizzly bears would be an invasive species, an exotic. They're saying that because, if we accept their premise as true, which I'm not saying we do, I'm just trying to understand this, but if you've removed grizzly bears from the entire state, it seems that you wouldn't be displacing a natural... I mean, it seems to me that the function, I hate that utilitarian language, but that function, that natural community function served by the grizzly bears before, is missing if it's not being done by... My point is that I could see this argument being made if there were still members of the subspecies in California who were here who might be displaced by the big bad Yellowstone grizzlies. Do you see what I'm saying? But if the primary ones have been removed, then the argument's moot anyway.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think that's right, that, you know, that they're close enough that they would serve the same functional role. It wouldn't be like introducing an exotic species that displaces lots of native species. More than likely, I mean, all the information we have is that it would help some native species come back, that it would generally be beneficial for the ecosystems.
Well, before we go to, we're about halfway through, before we talk more about politics, this is actually something I wanted to talk about earlier when you brought it up, is what are, once again, I hate the utilitarian language of functions, but let's use it anyway. What are some of the functions of bears, of grizzly bears, in a natural community? For example, I know that one of the things that they do is they carry the protein in salmon from the stream into the middle of the forest and poop it out. You said that they poop out seeds. That's very important. I'm guessing also because black bears are shot around here by timber companies because they girdle trees, so they help to create dead trees in forests. I'm guessing grizzlies do that. I don't know. So what are some of the functions of grizzly bears in a natural community? What do they do to help the community?
Well, so they're big diggers, you know, because they're digging around for roots and grubs. So that's part of how they increase plant diversity in addition to pooping out the seeds, you know. So they help maintain and create meadow habitats by doing that and by keeping those meadow habitats rich in plants, you know, which then benefits a host of other species, particularly insects, that pollinate, you know, so pollinators and other species that are depending on those particular plants that the grizzly bears are benefiting. You know, they do take prey, so they help control ungulate populations, much as wolves do, which, you know, it might be less of an issue in the Sierra Nevada, but maybe in places it is, you know. And in Yellowstone, that certainly turned out to be the case when they reintroduced wolves. You had a lot of riparian stream growth, and you know, grizzly bears play some degree of a role in that. When they take down prey, you know, it benefits a lot of other species as well, like ravens and foxes and other animals that also benefit from those carcasses. And actually, that's a good point about black bears. I know that they eat little trees, so they, you know, I would imagine help to keep the forest open as it regrows. I would imagine grizzly bears do that. They also tend to, you know, because they're getting grubs out of trees, they rip apart wood, and so they help with decomposition of wood as well. So a host of roles. And you know, I think one of the things that's been neat to see where we did reintroduce wolves is that, you know, a lot of the there were surprising results, you know, things like pronghorn fawn survival went up because coyotes were big predators on pronghorn fawns. And you know, I imagine that would be true if we were to bring grizzly bears back to somewhere like the Sierra Nevada, that there'd be surprising things that we would find out about, you know, what their role was, and now that they're playing it again, how that changed. You know, it presents a real opportunity to understand something about our world, because sometimes when we lose something, you know, our view of the world is so short-lived that, you know, we can lose something from the landscape, and there can be changes resulting from that loss that we just don't even know about because we weren't there and we weren't paying attention. And so, you know, it's part of the fascination, I think, is to see what would happen.
Yeah. You know, a great example of that I always think about is I read this article maybe 15 years ago about how passenger pigeons would be in these huge flocks, and they would then poop out so much from their flock that they would turn the soil acidic. And they think that one of the reasons that the chestnut blight was so successful in hammering the chestnut trees is that the soil composition was not as acidic as the because the passenger pigeons were eradicated, and the soil was not as acidic as they were used to, and so that weakened them a bit and allowed the blight to take over even more. So the point is, you remove one creature, and who knows what cascading effects that has. And so bring them back. It's like bringing back prairie dogs, and all of a sudden you've got a grassland instead of a desert.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So I think it, you know, some of the effects would be just really hard to predict, but I think, you know, what we do know now is that in particular they increase plant biodiversity. I have heard those, that's pretty well studied about them, bringing up the salmon protein further up into the watershed, and you know, so I think, you know, it's clear that it would be beneficial to the ecosystem, but the real fascination is in exactly how and what surprising effects we would see.
So let's go back to politics, and you've laid out the some of the opposition. What is our side trying to do? What are the people who are attempting to do the reintroduction? What is the campaign to make this happen?
Sure. So we've got a few things going on. I mean, as I mentioned, we filed this petition with Fish and Wildlife Service to try and get them to take a broader look at recovery. And unfortunately, they said no to that. They wrote us back and they said, you know, we're going to focus our recovery efforts on those areas we've already identified. And you know, which is disappointing. In some ways, Fish and Wildlife Service has really been pulling back on some of their carnivore recovery efforts. Like I just list a few of those quickly. Like for example, they Florida panther. It's a listed species. The recovery plan for that species says that they need to be reintroduced to additional areas besides South Florida. Fish and Wildlife Service is basically totally sitting on its hands on that. On Red Wolf, Fish and Wildlife Service did away with the Red Wolf recovery coordinator position and seems to be really pulling back from that program. For Mexican Gray Wolf, Fish and Wildlife Service is they've formed a recovery team three different times and then not let the recovery team finish a recovery plan. So the most recent one was in 2012, and one of the reasons why is because they were going to call for reintroducing Mexican gray wolves into the Grand Canyon and the Southern Rockies, and the states oppose that. So Fish and Wildlife Service doesn't want to get crosswise of the states. So it's, you know, that's been, you know, a difficult thing of late under the Obama administration, which Dan Ash is the director of Fish and Wildlife Service, and it's really cowed by state politics, unfortunately. That's been disappointing to see. To their credit, and one thing that has been a positive step forward is that they are finally looking at augmenting the grizzly bear population in the Cascade, in the North Cascades in Washington State. So they've done scoping and they're going through a NEPA analysis to do that, which is almost like a reintroduction because there's scattered bear sightings. A guy got a photograph of a grizzly bear in the North Cascades, I think in 2006 or something like that. It was one of the last sightings. So it'll really be bringing bears back to an area, and that'll be a good test case for other areas. Otherwise, since, you know, since we filed that petition, it's been interesting. You know, we got a lot of positive response to it. It attracted a lot of attention because we were calling for putting grizzly bears in additional areas. And in California, it in particular caught a lot of attention. And, you know, the San Francisco Chronicle did a feature on it, and LA Times published an op-ed by me. So it caught a lot of interest. And one of the things that came out of this is this ad firm called YNR, which I guess is a really big ad firm, I had no idea, approached us, and they wanted to develop this whole campaign around the grizzly bear in California. And they've come up with this imagery, which is the flag without the bear. It's actually very simple, but genius at the same time. And so we're just starting out getting that image out. We're going to have stickers, and we're going to try and really get that image out into the world. And because the flag is so everywhere, I mean, it's just ever present in California. It's, people have it on T-shirts. We're hoping that we can do a similar thing with this image of the flag without the bear and really get that out into the lexicon. And we're directing people to a petition site. So we're generally just trying to show that, yes, people do support this idea and build grassroots support before we actually go to the state and try and get convince them that they should look into doing this at the very least, if not just doing it. And so that's where we're at now, is in building that public support with the help of this big ad firm.
So I want to come back to the public support in just a moment, but before then, there's something else you said earlier I want to come back to, which is the you said one of the questions is where they would come from. Let's pretend that it's, you know, I don't know, 4 years from now, and you know, however many years from now, and you know, this has gone as well as could be hoped, and grizzly bears are going to be reintroduced into the Sierra Nevadas and the Siskiyous, by the way, and so where, what, how does that physically work? What happens?
Well, that's, I think.
Let's pretend it's all legalistically done. You just got to do it physically. What happens?
I think that, you know, is where there's still additional questions, like how many bears do you need to really start have a good chance at starting a population? And that's, you know, I haven't seen papers that deal with that issue. I think that's something that would really need to be looked at by some smart scientists. But I assume, you know, the one thing I do know is that with grizzly bears, they're different than wolves. You know, wolves, you know, have made their way into California now. They've made their, or almost. There's one wolf that was just recently sighted in California, and OR7, you know, was in California, but now is denned in Oregon, but not very far away from the border. So wolves are making a comeback in California on their own. The thing about wolves is that both the males and females will long distance disperse. Grizzly bears, the males will move around quite a bit, but the females won't. The females really have to move. It's really a territory to territory thing, so you have to have connectivity. That's why Yellowstone, actually, one of the reasons why we and others still argue that that population still needs protection under the Endangered Species Act is that it's isolated. Bears have not, you know, even though there's bear populations not that far away from there, bears have not, because there's not connecting habitat right now that have bears don't move from there or to there. So you definitely would have to physically move bears and presumably female bears. And so you'd have to capture bears from a population that's healthy, which, you know, actually the population in the North Gatineau Divide ecosystem, they've actually been moving some bears out of there into Cabinet Yak now. And they probably could do that more. So that's one potential source. But there's other bear populations in the Canadian Rockies that are also potential source populations. So you'd have to identify the source and make sure it's secure, and then you'd have to actually capture bears and move them, I imagine, by truck or rail, I would think, and let them go again. They're pretty hardy animals, though. I think they're one that could definitely take that.
So we just have a couple minutes left, and the first question is, I've got just a couple questions. One of them is, so what do you want people to do who hear this and are excited about it and want to help? First, in California, second, in the rest of the United States, and third, if they're outside the United States. What can any of those people do?
Well, they can go to our site, bringbackthebears.org, and sign our petition supporting bringing bears back to California. That'd be a start. And then we're going to have, you know, merchandise with this imagery out there in the world, stickers, maybe even t-shirts at some point. They can, you know, get that and say, you know, show their support for bears by wearing this imagery that shows the flag without the bear. They can definitely reach out to their representatives and they're in Congress, and if they're in California in the state, and let them know that they support bear recovery. I mean, you know, I think one encouraging sign is that, you know, our attitudes about carnivores and about predators in general is changing, you know, and people are becoming more accepting of them overall. And when you poll people about wolves or bears in general, you know, a majority of people support recovering these animals and want to see them and, you know, and care about them and relate to them, you know, in part because they're such a powerful animal. And you know, that's great to see. And I think people caring is really what's going to make the difference in the long run for these guys.
So the last question is, let's say that they made you, all of a sudden tomorrow, you are declared the emperor of all things grizzly in the United States. And you can set whatever policy you want for grizzly bears, except you can't like take down capitalism, take down civilization. You can't go that quite that big in the first month. So what would you want in terms of policy within the current regime? That's what I'm getting at. What would you want, and dream as big as you want to dream for this, what would you want for grizzly bears? What would be your vision that you would have happen if you could have anything you wanted happen politically? in the short term, not just short term like a year, but what would be your 5 and 10 and 15 year vision? What would you want to have happen?
Well, I think starting with those places that have been identified as having sufficient space for grizzly bears, it'd be great to see us have a plan for bringing bears back to all those areas. And, you know, it would spread them across much of their historic range. So that'd be a great start, including the Siskiyou, including the Sierra Nevada, including, you know, the Mogollon Plateau in Arizona, New Mexico, the Southern Rockies in Colorado. So that's, I think, just a minimum, you know, to bring them back into all those areas. And then I think from there, if, you know, people can change some of their practices, you know, including, you know, in communities that are in rural communities that are around there, you know, it means changing how you deal with your trash and stuff like that. But that's something that we need to be doing anyway for all kinds of wildlife, including black bears. So that would be something. But I think from there, you know, bears, you know, it's hard to know how far they could expand and if we're tolerant of them. And I think Europe is actually starting to show this. You know, they're starting to show that if you don't shoot these animals, they can survive in a lot of places where they used to occur, and they can serve their role in the ecosystem. So I would start there and then see where it goes from there. You know, I know bears in, you mentioned the Great Plains. I know to some degree the bears from Glacier are starting to spread out onto the plains a little bit, and it's just a question of whether we're going to allow them to do that again. And you know, that's something that's amazing, is to think about, is seeing something like a bear, but you're not, you know, up in the far up in the mountains in the middle of Yellowstone or Glacier National Park. You're actually on the coast or on the plains, and there's a bear, you know. That'd be great to see something like that again.
You know, I do a lot with Buffalo Field Campaign, and wouldn't it be wonderful to combine those visions and you see both bison and grizzly bears at the same time on the plains?
Yeah, I grew up in Minnesota and myself, and I often spent a lot of time, and as a kid, just thinking about the plains and thinking about what used to be there, and you know, you know, thinking about plains restoration is just amazing, you know. And there's a lot of potential there, and you know, it's a shame we had that oil boom in North Dakota, because I think, you know, there was some big dreams about a lot of plains restoration out there, and I think it could have been a reality. And you know, unfortunately, we've had that oil boom, and that's hurt it a little bit. But there's still a lot of space out there, and yeah, the Great Plains. If you could see grizzly bears on the Great Plains again, that would be quite a sight.
Well, thank you so much. And I would like to thank listeners for listening. My guest today has been Noah Greenwald. This is Derek Jensen for Resistance Radio on the Progressive Radio Network.
Mm-hmm.